You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
If you're a right-wing politician who's part of an anti-Semitic authoritarian government that attacks immigrants and refugees and minorities, shuts down newspapers and universities, undermines the rights of women, and attacks gay people, you don't want to go to a massive gay orgy, particularly if you're the guy who's bragged about writing anti-gay bigotry into your nation's constitution. You do not want to go to a massive gay orgy. Well, actually, that's not right. Of course you want to go to a massive gay orgy if you're that guy. If you're the guy who bragged about writing anti-gay bigotry into your nation's constitution, there is probably no place on earth you would rather be than a massive gay orgy. What you don't want to do, if you're that guy, is get caught at a massive gay orgy. And Joseph Sajer, that cocksucker got caught. Sajer is or was a Hungarian member of the European Parliament. He is or was a member of Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban's political party. Orban campaigned for power, attacking immigrants and minorities, and once he got power, he ended the independent judiciary and shut down the free press and universities, and continues still to this day to attack and demonize LGBT people. And Joseph Sajer, politician, part of Orban's political movement, that guy got caught at a gay orgy in Brussels after helping draft Hungary's quote-unquote pro-family, actually anti-gay, constitution. Sajer probably would have gotten away with attending that massive gay orgy. He has doubtless gotten away with attending massive gay orgies in the past. But gatherings of more than four people are currently banned in Belgium to prevent the spread of coronavirus, which is why the police raided this gay orgy. And it was the police showing up that prompted Sajer to pull up his pants and grab his backpack and jump out a window. The police arrested him on the rooftops of Brussels with cum on his breath and drugs in his backpack. Sajer resigned from the European Parliament and apologized to his wife and his voters for the quote-unquote misstep. Let he who is without sin, let he who hasn't misstepped his way into a drug-fueled 25-man gay orgy in the middle of a pandemic, throw the first stone. Oh, hey, and if there are any Hungarian drag queens listening to this show, misstep would make a really great drag name. There is no way to quantify just how much of the gay bashing that goes on in this world, in politics and families and churches and mosques and temples, is committed by self-hating closet cases. But we can safely say it's a lot. Because this Sajer piece of shit, he's not the first anti-gay politician to get caught with a dick in his mouth, and he won't be the last. Guys like Sajer attack other gay people to distract straight people from any tells that they might be gay. But these guys, they can never resist the biggest tells of them all. They can't resist climbing on that dick. They can't resist sucking off that rent boy. They can't resist attending that 25-man gay gangbang even during a pandemic. Needless to say, I fucking hate these guys for the harm they do, and not just to gay people. But these self-hating cocksuckers really do put the rest of us cocksuckers in a weird position. Because this happens so often, anti-gay closet cases getting caught in gay sex scandals, that happens so often that it's really tempting to accuse all anti-gay bigots of being fucked up closet cases. And that's awkward. It feels wrong. I mean, to accuse someone of being gay is to buy into the idea that gayness is something shameful, something a person can stand accused of. But man, it is tempting. And it may even be effective. Because the last thing an anti-gay bigot wants, whether he's gay or not, is for people to think that he's gay. And as we've seen again and again and again, there is something kind of gay about being anti-gay. All these motherfuckers, all these Ted Haggards, all these Larry Craigs, all these George Reekers, Google them. These guys, they really do put the homo in homophobia. But to be fair, not all anti-gay bigots are gay. They're not all externalizing their internal conflicts. Some of them are straight. But if we accused people who made homophobic jokes or passed homophobic legislation or worked for anti-gay political movements, if we accused them of being gay, if we pointed out that they might be gay, Well, then maybe gay or straight anti-gay bigots would be less likely to do or say anti-gay things in public or in parliaments, because that would be so gay. All right, coming up on today's show on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com, astrophysicist and author Katie Mack joins us to help put our problems in the universal perspective. All that coming up on today's show. Dame Products is a woman-founded company making toys for sex. Developed and tested by real people with vulvas, they're engineered to bring your solo and coupled play to new heights. Visit dameproducts.com/savage to see how they're making the world a better place, one vulva at a time. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by omgyes.com, a website devoted to women's pleasure. Check it out and get a discount when you go to omgyes.com/savage. Want to save money, save the planet, and look good while you're doing it? It doesn't get any better than ThredUp, the largest online consignment and thrift store. Shop over 35,000 brands at up to 90% off estimated retail. Go to thredup.com/savage for an extra 30% off your first order. That's thredup.com/savage. thredup.com/savage for an extra 30% off today.
Hi, Dan. I was calling today with a sex success story. I met my partner a few months back early in the pandemic. Both of us are cisgendered, pansexual, in a poly relationship. We met online and had several video dates. Those led to a walking date that lasted for a couple hours. We had hit it off. I wasn't sure of his COVID precautions, so I refused to hug him at the end of the date. But after another video date or two and me being comfortable, I invited him over to my apartment one Saturday afternoon. I gave him a time window and left keys outside so he could let himself in. When he walked in, I called from my bedroom where he found me naked in bed with my toys laying out. He only had a slight idea of what to expect. I had the window open and the ceiling fan blowing. I instructed him to sit in a chair across the room. On my dresser next to him, there was lube, a towel, and an erotic fiction book filled with stories of daddy encounters. I told him to sit down and start reading. I began stroking my body and getting myself more and more aroused. As he struggled through the story, I used my fingers and my toys to orgasm. He tried so hard to keep his eyes on the pages. As the encounter went on and he finished reading, I told him he was welcome to take his pants off and stroke himself. He pulled his pants down to reveal a rock-hard cock. I told him if he would like to undress fully, I would be okay with that. He took his shirt off and left his pants around his ankles. When he sat back down, he played with his balls, stroked his cock, and kept eye contact with me through two more of my orgasms. In the heat of the moment, I gave him instruction to stand up and stick his hard dick in my mouth. He stood up, walked over, and did as I told him. It wasn't very long before he came hard down my throat. As we were wrapping up, his wife texted, so he had to go. We kissed our first and only kiss during the encounter. He dressed and left. I never did hug him. But it was a bit before we met in person again, and now we're in love and totally committed. I think the fact that we fucked before we kissed and long before we even hugged has allowed our relationship to be a beautiful and intimate one.
Thank you for calling in and sharing your sex success story. We like to start each week's show with somebody's upbeat, positive sex success story, quarantine sex success, or just plain old regular sex success story. If you have one you want to share, 206-302-2064, give us a call and share it. We might start next week's show with your sex success story.
Hey, Dan, I'm a 30-year-old woman living in the Midwest, and I've got more of a friendship question. My best friend is 28. She's a single woman, has a good job, owns her own home, really has her shit together. She's kind of an introvert, so even though she enjoys being around people and she's really friendly and everyone likes her, she does need that solo time to kind of rest and recharge. We share a quarantine kind of circle. So we see each other about once a week, and we were hanging out the other night, and she expressed to me that she's feeling kind of lonely, and the increased like solo time has got her feeling isolated, and she's having thoughts of like wanting to meet someone and wishing she had someone to share this experience in her life with. And I asked, you know, if not app dating, which she's not interested in doing, how would you meet someone? And she said, I guess through friends. And, you know, this conversation was all had knowing that the pandemic complicates dating quite a bit. And so when I got home that night, I was just chatting with my boyfriend about how the evening had gone, and without obviously betraying any of my friend's secrets, told him that she's feeling this way, and he suggested setting her up with one of his friends. This friend is a single guy, he's pretty nice, travels for work, so she'd have alone time, and we think they'd be compatible. And so my question is, do you think it's wise to set friends up like this? I've never played matchmaker before, I guess. And obviously it would have to be right now a little more calculated than maybe just, you know, casually going out at a bar because, you know, there's a global pandemic. But is this even a good idea? I don't know if it's a good idea. And if we decide that it is, would you tell your friend that you're trying to set them up with someone? My boyfriend doesn't think that we should tell my friend that we're setting her up, or his friend for that matter. But I don't necessarily know if springing it on my friend is a good idea. You know, nothing's going to happen anytime soon because we have to stay away from each other. But just as something that we're thinking about.
You shouldn't tell your friend you're trying to set them up on a date once setting friends up on dates is possible again. But you don't need to tell this particular friend that that's what you're doing. This friend already asked you to do that. So this friend is probably going to assume, and rightly so, that if you invite them over and one or two other people for a game night, that there might be somebody there that you thought they might want to meet. And you can just let your friend take it from there and let your boyfriend's friend take it from there. If they spark, if they are both attracted to each other as objects, if that visual attraction component is there, and if you set something up where the friends you're setting up that forces them to converse a little bit and to interact a little bit, but the focus is on something else, like the playing of a game, that's a really good and effective way to set two people up. So you ask me what I would do, that's what I would do. I wouldn't tell them I'm setting you up on a date because they would probably assume that might be what's happening, and I would put them in a room with each other where there was something else that was the focus. They weren't just sitting in a room staring at each other being forced to talk across the table, that they were involved in some project together, like playing a complicated, fun board or card game. That's how you set up friends. But you are right. You can't set up friends like that right now. There's a global pandemic on. We can't meet face to face. So you might want to encourage your friend, because it's going to be months and months and months and months and months before a vaccine comes online. You might want to encourage your friend to revisit her opposition to online dating. A lot of people who weren't online dating before are online dating now, because online dating's pretty much the only responsible option at this moment for single people who would like to do some dating, even if at the moment it has to be virtual. The vast and overwhelming majority of same-sex couples out there, prior to the onset of the global pandemic that's on, met online, and the plurality of opposite-sex couples, most opposite-sex couples, met via online dating. I think after the pandemic, those numbers are going to obviously be even higher. So your friend might want to revisit her opposition, and you could offer some assistance. If she's never done any online dating, you could help her set up a profile, help her pick out some pictures, help her answer the questions, and then help her vet some of the responses. That's another way that you could set your friend up right now. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Oh My God, Yes! Imagine what cooking with someone would be like if there weren't words for things like fry or salt or bowl or whisk. One result of the taboo and silence around sexual pleasure is a lack of words, and you can't use your words if you don't have your words. That's where Oh My God, Yes! Comes in. Oh My God, Yes! Is large-scale research in partnership with Indiana University and Yale researchers found that most of the specific ways of touching that are sexually pleasurable for women don't even have names yet. As author and Savage Lovecast guest Peggy Orenstein said, there's no better way to make something unspeakable than to not name it. One of the main benefits OhMyGodYes.com users report is having more words for what they like after using the site. It's trippy to recognize something that you really like but hadn't even formalized in your head before. Like how broad pressure on the clit with a palm instead of a fingertip can give bigger, softer pleasure, or ways to hold a partner's body against you during penetration so they stay inside and rock instead of jackhammering in and out, or when a fingertip stays just barely inside the anus before orgasm. Come and see the surprising wide range of what feels good at OhMyGodYes.com. and find new words for your own or your partner's pleasures. It can powerfully improve your sex life and empower you to try things, ask for things, adjust things, and combine things. Oh My God Yes makes a terrific holiday gift, and Savage Lovecast listeners get a special discount at omgyes.com/savage. That's omgyes.com/savage.
Hey, Dan, I'm a 30-year-old cis gay man, and I have a question for you regarding humor, political correctness, and trauma. I have a group of friends that text frequently in a group chat. The conversation in the chat is often crude, sexual, and full of jokes. Some of the jokes are immature and harmless, but many I find to be borderline or outright offensive. Up until recently, I've regrettably held my tongue. The other day, one of the girls in the chat made a rape joke, and I piped up to say that I didn't think joking about rape was funny. The response I got from her was, well, let's put it to a vote to see if the chat finds it funny. Having had enough, I declared that I didn't find it funny and that I was leaving the group chat. I'm currently dating a 40-year-old cis gay man, and we've been together for about a year. He was also in the chat, and I'd voiced to him on previous occasions that rape jokes make me uncomfortable, and I think that they're tasteless and offensive. He was not at his phone at the time of the exchange, but also did not bother to reach out to me when he saw it later to question why I left the group chat so suddenly or see if I was okay. When I mentioned this to him, he did not seem to see why it was a big deal. So I decided to disclose to him my experience of being molested and raped as a child. While he was definitely sympathetic to my trauma, he also defended our friend who made the joke and argued that she was a nice person and a good friend to me, that her intent wasn't to trigger or hurt me, and that she would not make that joke in public. He's known her much longer than I have. However, in my experience with her, she often tells off-color and politically incorrect jokes. He suggested that perhaps I talk with her and explain why I found the rape joke to be so offensive, but I don't think I should have to lay out my trauma for her or that it's my responsibility to educate her as to why sexual assault jokes aren't funny. It's 2020, and I feel like people should know that their words matter, and joking about sexual assault can be jarring to people. He asked, well, where is the line about what you can and can't joke about? A joke about clubbing a baby seal could be offensive to a vegan. Our conversation did not really go anywhere, and while he seemed to somewhat understand why I was upset, he also said that people in general need to have a little bit thicker skin and be aware of intent. We dropped the topic, but I did not necessarily feel supported by my boyfriend in the moment, and he still engages in the group chat and is of the mindset that he and I just have different outlooks on humor. I still interact with these people, however, not in my group chat, but I'm trying to decide where to go from here. Am I a hypocrite if I pretend like nothing happened and move on? I've definitely taken a step back from my friendship with the girl who made the joke. Should I continue to engage with my boyfriend on this topic? What should I do, Dan?
I'm not sure quite how to say what it is that I want to say, because I don't want you to think, caller, that I am being flip or in any way not taking your point or your trauma seriously. And I'm very sorry to hear that you were molested and raped, assaulted as a child. That's terrible. But I can't help but wonder what that rape joke this woman told in that group chat was, because I think rape is something that can be joked about. It depends on what the butt of the joke is, what the target of the joke is. John Mulaney is a comedian that I love, slightly problematic, but I love him. He's really funny. He has this bit he does about walking in a New York City subway down a long hallway, and the woman in front of him picked up the pace, and so he thought that she could hear the train coming, and so he picked up the pace, and it was 2 o'clock in the morning, and they were the only two people in this long hallway. And then she started to run, and he started to run thinking the train was coming, and at that moment he realized that she thought he was following her and about to attack her. And it's an extended rape joke, basically, but it is the circumstance and the tragedy of the circumstance that is being highlighted. And the butt of the joke really is John Mulaney and his obliviousness as a man in that moment to what the woman that he's walking down a hallway with or a subway tunnel with in the middle of the night, what her perceptions might be. And it's an extended rape joke that draws attention to male obliviousness and the fear that women live with day in, day out in a rape culture. And I think that a man who sits in an audience and listens to John Mulaney's extended rape joke may, after laughing his ass off because it's a very funny bit, be a little less oblivious the next time he is walking behind a woman on a sidewalk in the middle of the night when no one else is around or in a subway tunnel or anywhere else. He may, by dint of hearing this rape joke that John Mulaney told, be more sensitive and less oblivious to what the woman in front of him or the woman on the street with him may be experiencing. So I do think a rape joke can be told. I don't know if the rape joke that this woman told in this group chat that you say is often very offensive and un-PC was that kind of joke where women and rape victims weren't the butt of the joke. But perhaps women and rape victims, by the dint of this joke having been told, may be, in fact, safer in the future. That this joke and the wisdom that is sometimes relayed in a joke, or the wisdom that's certainly relayed in John Mulaney's long extended rape joke, may make the world a better place for victims of sexual trauma, victims of rape. So I don't want to say that it's never okay to make a rape joke, because sometimes it is okay, and sometimes we all benefit from a certain particular kind of rape joke being told. Now, caller, if you didn't get the kind of support you wanted from your boyfriend, you should tell him that. You should tell him the kind of support that you expected from him in that moment and explain why you were disappointed. But I don't think that you should police who your boyfriend remains friendly with. And it sounds like this group chat wasn't to your taste ever. You say that there are other things that people said in this place where people are kind of shitposting, kind of shit-talking, kind of trying to say offensive things that you were offended by. And maybe you needed to peace out of that chat a long time ago. And now you're out of that chat. You don't have to think about it. If it would make you feel better to say something to this woman, you can. You don't have to rehearse your story for her. You don't have to share it with her. You can just tell her that it was offensive. Maybe unpack for her why, if unlike John Mulaney's long rape joke, if the butt of her joke was the victim, maybe you could point that out to her. And maybe you would feel better for having pointed that out to her. And then you do not need to rehearse your trauma for her. But I think the lesson for you going forward is, if you're offended by the things that people are saying in that space, that group chat or that comedy club, get the fuck out. Leave. Leave before you're so offended that you don't have a choice but to leave. Choose to leave before you get to that point. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by ThredUp. This year, fight the power. Refuse to buy new things for the holidays. Get all your loved ones gently used items at ThredUp. Can treat yourself to unbelievable prices. ThredUp is easy to use and new stuff arrives every hour, so there's always something new and fresh to find at ThredUp. Plus, if you shop on the app and you do leave the house, you can take ThredUp with you wherever you go. They have an amazing selection, such low prices, and it's so convenient. ThredUp is the world's largest online thrift store with up to 90% estimated retail. At ThredUp, you can shop from over 45,000 brands for women's or kids' clothing, handbags, shoes, and more, all for a fraction of the price. At ThredUp, you get the insane deals of thrifting. And who doesn't love those insane deals? And who doesn't love and sometimes miss right now thrifting? But at ThredUp, you get the insane deals of thrifting, but with the convenience of online shopping. Score Zara from $6, Madewell and J.Crew from $9, and Nike from $6. Shop online, customize your search by your size, style, and budget so you can find the best deals instantly. ThredUp makes thrifting so easy. Get items in high-quality condition, some even with their original tags still on them, all delivered right to your door. They also have a super easy return policy, so they make thrifting worry-free. Nancy and her family love ThredUp. I love ThredUp. You will love ThredUp, too. For Savage Lovecast listeners who haven't given ThredUp a try yet, ThredUp has an exclusive offer just for you. Get an extra 30% off your first order at ThredUp.com/Savage. That's ThredUp.com/Savage for 30% off your first order. ThredUp.com/Savage for an extra 30% off today. Terms apply.
Hey, Dan. I'm a single 46-year-old cis female who likes men. And, well, dogs. I've been listening to you for about a year, so I've heard many surprising, at least to me, sexual situations. So I'm not sure why I'm feeling extremely embarrassed, shameful, and vulgar about sharing this. But I finally got the nerve in hopes that you can help me understand me in this way a little better. So, I am currently masturbating exclusively alone. Sometimes I hook up virtually with a hottie and masturbate mutually. during masturbating, like many, I have to have the right scenario in my mind to get off. I have many fetishes that my alter ego shames me for. I'm sure a lot to do with how I was raised. But the one thing I really question myself as to why is every time I masturbate, especially at the point of coming, I have to imagine a scenario of a dog fucking me and coming inside or somewhere on me. I really have no idea how this place started in my head. I've never watched or experienced bestiality in reality, but it's a guarantee. I have to think me and a dog and bam, I come. I mean, I am a highly sexual, kinky female, and thoughts of fucking all kinds of men turn me on throughout the day, but the dog gets me in the end. When I try to psychoanalyze myself to why I do this, thoughts come like when I was a child, I remember watching nature on PBS and seeing all kinds of animals humping, and those were really impactful on me when I was like 8. On the other spectrum, I've had very traumatic relationships with men. Anyways, I'm so curious and ashamed. Why does it have to be a dog and not some, say, mythical beast instead? Or just a guy, which I actually would love it to be, exclamation point. I know you've said something like fantasies in your head are safe, but still would like to get your take on why I can't orgasm without this scenario. Am I really messed up?
A few months ago, I mentioned on this podcast, a friend who fantasizes about and gets off fantasizing about being castrated. And this resulted in some friends, other friends, trying to guess which of our mutual friends was the friend that I mentioned who fantasizes about wanting to be castrated. So I'd like to make it clear that this person I referred to as a friend who wants to be castrated is somebody I met through the column, somebody who wrote me a note and I wrote them back and we got into an exchange and we swapped phone numbers and we texted for a bit. And they're one of those weird online relationships, weird sort of virtual relationships that new technologies have made it possible for us to form. And so that is the friend I was referring to. It's not actually anybody in my social circle. Everybody else in my social circle, please take note. It is a friend out there on the ether, in the world, someone whose existence I verified. I'm not talking to somebody who's just having a wank leading me on. And I was really fascinated about that. And one of the questions that he and I have sort of discussed via text is, why that? What was it that resulted, you know, what early childhood experience, what did he imprint on that made this the thing that he has, since he started masturbating at age 12 or 13, he's had to think about in order to come, that he's thought about practically with every orgasm that he's ever had. And there are so many different possible explanations. Sex shame. You know, he's also gay. Maybe he just feels sex shame. He doesn't have a right to be sexual and that there should be some intervention that prevents him from being fully sexual. Maybe he internalized messages that as a gay boy, that as an effeminate gay boy, he was not a man, not entitled to identify as a man, not deserving of having those testicles that were endowing him with the secondary sex characteristics of the man that he wasn't. There's just so many ways that you could pick it apart, so many places that you could pin the development of this particular kink and fetish on. And in some cases, I think that that's ultimately a fool's errand because you can never know. You can never, I think, determine beyond a reasonable doubt what it was, what some individual's erotic imagination seized on that made X, whatever X might be, the place their mind has to go or the place their mind does go every time that they're getting close to climaxing. We are infinitely complicated monkeys. And I think we should marvel at it and appreciate it and recognize in somebody else's crazy erotic obsession so long as no one is being harmed or no animals are being harmed in the process of them getting their orgasm, getting off, that this is something that we all kind of have in common. Everybody's got their weird erotic tics. All right, your weird erotic tic is less tic, more dog. Not about being castrated, about being bred, by a dog. Why does your head go there? I don't know. Your theory is as good as mine. It could be that it was those shows that you watched as a child, those nature shows, Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, where you saw a lot of animals humping and you saw sex as something animalistic, and perhaps some part of your brain, some part of your erotic imagination seized on that, and that you would feel most free doing this animalistic thing, most able to climax, get yourself to that point of sort of going over the falls and release if you were doing this animalistic thing with an animal and with that particular animal. What do you do about it? Well, I think sometimes you can refocus a kink. I don't think you can eradicate a kink, but I think you can refocus a kink sometimes if you drill down on what it is about that kink, what it symbolizes, what its deeper meanings are, what might be at the ultimate root of that kink, recognizing that even if you can identify the ultimate root of a kink, you can never root it out. Is it something about the power of an animal, the way an animal that is taking pleasure is so focused on that pleasure and not distracted by other thoughts? I don't know. Again, I can only speculate. You may be able to tease out what the deeper meanings are here, the themes of your kink, and then shift your kink, shift your thoughts, maybe with the help of a cognitive behavioral therapist, in a way that goobs you out less. But if this is just a place your head goes, a place you go privately, not something you're ever actually going to do, how much time and energy do you want to spend trying to root this out at your age? Maybe this is just something that you need to privately, secretly embrace and accept. This is the little tickle your erotic imagination has to provide you with, in addition to whatever stimulation you're getting from your partner or your vibrator in the moment to take you fully there. There are some people who can't come, some people who can't ever get fully there, some people who can't climax, who would kill to have this secret weapon in their erotic imagination that guaranteed them a climax, guaranteed that they would be able to get off. So maybe you could see this as a net positive, even if it is something that you can never fully understand and may not ever want to share with a partner. But if you really do want to root it out, if you really do want to replace this with something else, something more socially acceptable so you can share your sex secrets at dinner parties, maybe werewolves. Nobody seems to have a problem with people who are fantasizing about getting it on with shapeshifters or werewolves or vampires. If it was an erotic horror trope that turned you on, people might not have as much of a problem with it or be as goobed out by it if they knew about it. But people, you know, they don't have to know about it. But if you really do want to root it out, again, talking with a cognitive behavioral therapist about changing a thought pattern, it works. Erotic thought patterns seem to be more deeply wired and really wired into subconscious parts of our brain, reptile parts of our brain that we can't consciously control. I don't know if cognitive behavioral therapy would be as effective with a kink. I think, you know, now that I think about it for another minute, if it did work very well with kinks, we would hear about people with kinks that bothered them seeking out cognitive behavioral therapists to tweak and adjust them. But not eradicate. Again, that's my point. You're never going to eradicate this. But maybe if with the help of a CBT therapist, you can get to a deeper understanding of its meaning. Other places your brain might go at this moment could reveal themselves to you. If there's ever been a time to invest in good new sex toys, that time is now. A new sex toy can jumpstart your sex life, increase the quality and frequency of your orgasms, and keep you coming back for more. Dame Products is a woman-owned sex toy company making the next generation of vulva-tested, vulva-approved vibrators. Founded by a sex educator and an engineering whiz, Dame develops toys with the help of real humans and couples like you. They're closing the pleasure gap and helping the world one vulva at a time. Dame Products vibrators and accessories are made with medical-grade silicone, smart design principles, and lots of love, earning glowing press from the New York Times, W Magazine's, Me, and more. Whether you're a couple looking for an extra boost where it matters or on a journey of self-exploration, we're sure that Dame Products will earn a spot on your nightstand. And the best part? Dame offers hassle-free returns within 60 days, so your satisfaction is quite literally guaranteed. Go to dameproducts.com/savage today for $10 off. Get yourself something that's going to improve your sex life, improve your relationship, and support the Lovecast by going to dameproducts.com/savage. That's dameproducts.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. So I was listening to a podcast last night, and it was one of these podcasts that people call in and tell their secrets. And as I'm listening, I hear one of my oldest friends, and she's sharing how she was molested as a little girl. And I am in a dilemma whether or not to reach out to her or not. I'm thinking, obviously, she told the secret on a podcast because she needed to let it out and has never told me this. But I know it's her. I'm like 99.9% sure that that's her voice. And even the storyline, like she mentioned something about her family that very clearly it's her. And I don't know what to do. I want to support her. So I don't know if I let her know that I know that this happened and that I heard this thing, or do I just honor her privacy and not say anything? I don't know what to do.
You say this is one of your oldest friends, but then you say you're wondering whether you should reach out to her or not. That leads me to believe that even if she is chronologically one of your oldest friends, she's not currently one of your closest friends, nor are you one of her closest friends. I assume what you mean by reach out to her now is that you haven't reached out to her in a while and may not have been in contact with her for a while. So you may not be the right person or the right friend to come out of the woodwork after however much time to ask her about this. Or you could be the perfect friend, because you may be that person who's at a bit of a distance and a bit of a remove. And in the same way the listeners of that podcast were at a distance and a remove, and that made her feel more comfortable sharing this secret about herself, you may be the perfect person for her to open up about this trauma or continue to open up about this trauma. So it's a real dilemma, because the premise of this platform is the anonymity. It's a secret being shared. Her name isn't attached to it. It may upset her for her to realize, and this is something that I hope she realized in advance, that other people listening to the podcast, somebody among those other people, particularly if it's a popular podcast, may recognize her voice, recognize her story. And then it won't be, at least in that particular listener's head, an anonymous story. And it won't be, therefore, a secret, or a secret that she's keeping from you anymore. Even if you are, I hope, respecting her privacy, not blabbing about this to other friends you may have in common who haven't listened to this particular podcast. Now, when it comes to things that people know, it's hard to not know what you do know. And maybe this belongs in that file. It's difficult to pretend not to know something that you do know. If you stumble over evidence that somebody's cheating on you by snooping, it's hard to pretend that you don't know that. When you hear somebody, your oldest friend or one of your oldest friends, sharing something traumatic on a podcast that they suffered that you weren't aware of, it's difficult to go on pretending not to know this thing about them that you now know, particularly if you didn't violate their privacy, really, in any way. You listened to a podcast. They shared this with a podcast to be broadcast, and that's how you discovered it. What would I do if I were you? I think I would err on the side of reaching out to her. Maybe reach out to her, reestablish contact, catch up with each other, and not bring this up. And then if you continue to talk with each other, if she's happy to have you back in her life, if you guys reestablish your connection and your friendship is revived, maybe 6 or 7 phone calls or socially distanced visits later, she will have brought it up. If not, then perhaps you could bring it up. It might offend her. It might upset her. But if she needs support, if she needs supportive friends in her life now, if this is something that she is beginning to process in a very public way now, and she needs support, and she very well might, I think erring on the side of tiptoeing up to offering her that support is the right thing to do. Reach out to her first without bringing this up right away. And get a sense for how she's feeling, how she feels about you, and what she might need from you as a friend in the future.
Hey, Dan, a big fan here. Thank you so much for your advice over the years. And, you've truly changed how I view monogamy and communication in relationships. So I hope you can help me. 2 weeks ago, my partner and I broke up. I'm 33 and he's 28. I know 33 isn't that old, but I'm old enough and I've dated enough to know that this was really special. I really love him. He's my friend and my partner, and we just have such a wonderful time together. He broke up with me because he felt we were going different places in our lives, mostly that I absolutely do not want to have children, and he does. And he felt that in the end, we wouldn't end up together, and it was reckless to kind of march down this path of togetherness, knowing that it would have to end, and that we might end up getting more hurt. We had talked about future plans together. Specifically, we rock climbed together outdoors a lot, and we had both wanted to take some time off together when this pandemic was over to go climbing. We just had so many things that we wanted to do. However, over the last couple weeks since we broke up, we've been talking and spending time together, and we can't really seem to let each other go. At this point, since I don't want kids, I'm pretty happy to kind of coast along and enjoy spending time with him. He really loves me and was upset when we broke up. We both want to see if there's any way we can stay in each other's lives. I guess I need to know if there is another way to define a relationship. We're talking in the next couple weeks about what we can do moving forward, and I just need an understanding of what there could be. If dating with an expiration date is a stupid idea, friends with benefits seems like a weird label. We want to stay together and be intimate and spend time together, even though we both know it will ultimately end. Dan, do you think this is a bad idea? How else can we define a relationship that isn't, you know, monogamy, polyamory, friends with benefits, in that we were in love and we are in love and we're partners, but there is an end date?
Usually when somebody's call opens with a long string of compliments for me, we cut it because I am Catholic and uncomfortable with compliments. But we left them in, your call, because you opened by saying you've learned so much listening to this show. You've learned so much listening to me, also listening to my callers and their comments and their questions. And yet you're facing really a manufactured crisis in this relationship because he wants kids and you do not. And somehow that in both your heads means you can't possibly be together. But I think if you'd been listening closely to the show, you would have heard by this point that there are so many different ways for people these days to create families. And it would be possible for him to have children with another woman, to have another relationship, to have a parenting relationship with another woman, to be the known donor and dad, involved dad in the lives of a lesbian couple that wanted to have children, and that you could play a role in those children's lives without having to be a full-time or custodial parent or even a particularly involved adult if you didn't wish to be. Or he could have kids on his own, live with them separately. You could maintain your own. There's lots of different ways that you could have what you want or not have what you don't want, and he could have what he wants, and you could still be together. And I don't think you have to put an expiration date on this relationship, and obviously neither of you wants to end it at this point. So don't end it. And who knows? You know, early in a relationship, something that feels like a deal breaker, you know, a faith you want to raise your kids in, or whether you want to have kids or not, or what part of the country you want to live in, or whether the relationship's going to be opened or closed. People can not – it's not quite compromise on those things. I don't want to say compromise on those things. People can change. People can realize later on that they want something different, or that they want you, and going without kids or anal or monogamy or polyamory or whatever it might be is the price of admission they're willing to pay to be in the relationship. So I think you two should continue to see each other, and for you two to look around your community and see if you can't find examples of other people, who are in love and still together, who found different ways to create family for themselves, perhaps ways that have allowed one person to parent and the other person to not parent and still stay together. And you rule out polyamory, all right? Doesn't have to be poly. Doesn't mean he has to have a relationship with someone else. Again, he could be the known donor to a single lesbian or to a lesbian couple that wants an involved father figure or father, biological father and dad in the lives of their children, and those couples are definitely out there, and he would get to have his parenting thing and still get to go rock climbing with you. So keep seeing each other, keep climbing rocks, keep communicating, keep talking, keep exploring your options, expose yourselves to other families that have been created in other ways than just the mom and dad at home in the suburbs kind of idea of family we all have stuck in our heads, and see what might be possible for you two. And allow this relationship to continue to grow. And it may be that the conflict is resolved in the end because for other reasons unrelated to parenting, you part ways in a few years and you'll be able to look back on this as a good short-term relationship and not the relationship that you needed to be in for the rest of your life or that he wanted to be in for the rest of his life. But still, for this time in your life, it was good. And those sorts of relationships that are good for us right now, are valid. They have worth. A relationship does not have to end in a funeral home or a maternity ward to have been worthwhile and worth your time. Right now, he's worth your time. Right now, you're worth his time. Only time will tell if you two are going to find a new way to form a family or if you're going to part ways, end the romantic relationship, and stay in each other's lives as loving and supportive friends.
Hi, Dan. I'm a big fan of the show. Quick question. What is the difference between making love and fucking slowly?
Different people make love in different ways. Some people make love fast and furious, Tokyo Drift. Some people make love slow and languid. It really is very subjective. What I might think of as lovemaking, you might think of as trauma-inducing. It really depends. So you can't just... If somebody says to you, I want to make love to you, or I want you to make love to me, assume that what they want is slow and sensuous and languid and that particular kind of passion. You need more info. You need more data than just, I would like to be made love to. Often when people do say, we made love, it is about a certain kind of sensuousness or the taking of time, the going of slow. But that's not always the case. Some people find slow lovemaking to be tedious. Other people find slow lovemaking to be exactly what they want. Ask your partner what lovemaking means to them and then make love to your partner the way they would like love made to them. And be clear with your partner about what making love feels like or looks like to you, what it means for you, and find somebody who's roughly on the same page. But yeah, slow, sensuous, passionate. Lots of kisses, candles, rose petals on the bed. Some people think that's making love. Other people think hanging from the wrists in a sex dungeon and being flogged before being brutally fucked hard and fast is making love. It's personal. It's subjective. And the person whose opinion really matters here, whose preference really matters here, is the person you're sleeping with, not your sex advice podcast host. All right, before we get to your response calls, let's read your tweets. At Chase the Danger tweets, listening to a call on the hashtag Savage Lovecast from a woman whose boyfriend has no kinks and thinking about the boyfriend I had that was completely vanilla right up until the point I discovered his very well-hidden giantess fetish 2.5 years in. That was a conversation. I think I speak for everyone, Chase the Dragon, when I say we want to hear more about that conversation. Please call in and share. At McLivSauce tweets, hey, at Fake Dan Savage, P-I-T, penis and tits. Just wanted to double check. Hashtag Savage Lovecast. P-I-V, penis and vagina, as everyone knows. P-I-B, penis and butt. P-I-T, penis in throat. I could have gone with P-I-M, penis in mouth, but I like my rhymes. P-I-V, P-I-B, P-I-T. Oh, and of course, P-I-D, penis in drawer, for all the peggers out there. And finally, David Tranto tweets, woke up thinking about the bi woman and the monogamous marriage from last week's Savage Lovecast. I have so many thoughts beyond Dan Savage's that won't fit in a response call. Do I need to write a pamphlet called Bi Monogamy to get enough clout to come on the show as a guest? David, whose Twitter handle is @_Windcaster, posted a long thread after that tweet. Not quite pamphlet length, but it's smart and funny and worth looking up. Thanks to everyone who posts about the show to social media. It really helps us pull in new listeners. And if you want me to read your tweet on an upcoming episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to use the hashtag Savage Lovecast. And now your response calls.
Hi, Dan. I had to leave a comment for the caller that called about complaining about American flag, asking if there's anything for us as Americans to be proud of anymore and things like that. Please, please, caller, talk to an immigrant. You have no idea how lucky we are to live here. Living in America in 2020, even with our problems right now, political division and all these other issues, is doing life in easy mode compared to most of the world. Seriously, stop shitting on this country that provided literally refuge for people like me.
This is a response to the flag question. And I generally agree with Dan's perspective that the American flag doesn't belong to the right. But I wanted to sort of add perspective as a cis black man in the Midwest. I definitely pay attention to the way that people use the American flag, especially if it's, for lack of a better term, obnoxious, kind of like a giant flag in the living room or flying in the patio without a pride flag in addition to it. Anything like that, I pay attention to because at least here in the Midwest, I noticed that it's sort of a Confederate light flag because hardly anyone in the Midwest accepts the Confederate flag. But if maybe you still don't support that Black Lives Matter or are harmful towards trans people, there's a correlation, at least in the Midwest, I think, to those things. And so I just want to say that to validate the caller and say that she's not the only one who kind of picks up on how people use the American flag. And at least from a racial trauma hyper-awareness point of view, I definitely pay attention to that.
Hi, Dan. This is a response to the caller from episode 736, who's worried because her boyfriend doesn't have any kinks. He sounds like me. We exist. I am vanilla, and I always have been. Listening to the Lovecast, it's easy to forget that the incredible sexual diversity of humanity includes vanilla people too. In this sense, your boyfriend is no more weird than the guy who wants to dress up as a baby or the woman who wants to be pooped on. So, as Dan mentioned, as long as your boyfriend is GGG and a partner willing to help you explore, there's no reason not to take him at his word.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question you need answered or a comment about this week's show? Give us a call at 206-302-2064 to record your question or your comment, or email us your question or comment at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. This Saturday, December 12th, Nancy and I are doing another Savage Love live stream where I'll be answering as many of your questions as I can live from my Christmassy living room. Last time we did this, it was a total blast. Go to savagelovecast.com/events. Get your tickets now. And you have one more chance to catch Hump's Greatest Hits Volume 2 this Thursday, December 10th. Head to humpfilmfest.com for this great compilation of our favorite dirty movies from the last 15 years of Hump. And you now have until January 8th to make and submit a dirty movie for Hump 2021. Hump Films, they can be softcore, hardcore, live action, animation, anything and everything, anyone and everyone goes at Hump. Go to humpfilmfest.com/submit to learn more. And if you're looking for the perfect gift for someone on your list, consider getting them a Magnum subscription to the Savage Lovecast. The subscription gives your loved ones access to every single Magnum episode. Magnum subscribers, they get more rants, more guests, more questions, more answers. But Magnum subscribers don't hear any ads. Magnums are ad-free. Go to savagelovecast.com and buy someone a Magnum subscription today. Follow me on Twitter @FakeDanSavage. Follow Katie Mack on Twitter @AstroKatie. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian, and me and the tech savvy at risk youth and Nancy. We'll be back at you next week for an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.